football on off the ball.
I mean, how many times did you see a long ball going up to Jokeres and the two centre-halves for Atleti letting it bounce and then him backing in and winning fouls? That's old school stuff, and people looking at it and thinking, oh, that's not great. What, you want me to get 15 passes before we get it up to...
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
The News Round is brought to you by Viagra Connect 50 milligram film-coated tablets.
Contains sildenafil for adult men with erectile dysfunction. Maximum dosage 150 milligram tablet per day. Always read the label. Buy online at viagraconnect.ie. Subject to suitability following pharmacist consultation.
Good evening and welcome along to Wednesday Nights Off the Ball. Coming up tonight, we're going to be speaking to Charlie McConlogue, Minister of State for Sport, in studio from around 7:30. From 8:20, Ross Harris is going to join us to talk about the final weekend of the URC. Before 9:00, Eve Conway will be with us in studio because she's been down at Mandela Park talking to Finn McLaughlin and Alex Dunn this week. And then between 9 and 10, the football show is coming your way with Keith Tracy here in studio. Manchester City versus Crystal Palace on the agenda in the Premier League. And of course, the penultimate round of fixtures in the Scottish Premiership as well. So loads of live football to talk about tonight. Our number is 087-9180-180 if you want to get in touch. Dan Pitcher is here with the News Round tonight. How are you doing, Dan?
Good evening, Owen.
Ben Symes is here. How are you, Ben?
Very well.
And Keith Tracy popping in early for the News Round. Keith, how are you keeping?
I'm great. How's everybody keeping?
All good. We'll come to the football in just a moment, but as mentioned, we're going to have Charlie McConlogue joining us in studio this evening. So he is the Minister of State with responsibility for sport. We're going to be talking about the Irish Sport Monitor, which came out today. It's the Sport Ireland survey, which tells us how active we are as a nation, what are our favourite sports in terms of participation and all that sort of stuff. So that'll be part of the conversation. The bulk of what we're going to talk about, though, is the Community Sports Facilities Fund. So this is the fund formerly known as the Sports Capital and Equipment Programme. So this involved a fund of around €250 million in 2023. The next fund is open for applications in the summer of 2026. So if you're somebody who's involved in a club who's interested in getting a little slice of this large pie, then you might want to hang around to listen to Minister McConlogue a little bit later on. But I was interested to chat to you a little bit about this, Keith, because knowing you were coming in today, I know the work that you've been doing in terms of campaigning for green spaces and sports facilities in Dublin One around the Sheriff Street area. And it's something that's really kind of jumped off the page when I was doing my research today about how areas of Dublin and other deprived areas around the country just don't really stand a chance when it comes to these large-scale capital infrastructure funds, particularly on a sporting level. And it's down to the fact that so few organisations actually own large plots of land. And in fact, so few children have access to green spaces to actually play, never mind built-up facilities. So what you have is this vicious cycle where even getting on a rung of the ladder to give yourself a shot of getting a slice of this pie just kind of feels impossible.
Yeah, and it's an uphill battle, obviously with social media and technology that's available to kids now as well. But the one thing, when I get a pain in the head with Teddy and I tell him to get out the door and play, and he looks at me and says, where am I supposed to go to? And I'm campaigning to try and save the Strange Pitch, and so is a lot of other people. And I don't like saying this, but the likes of Troy Parrott, Wes Houlihan, Graham Bourke, Kelly Harrington, the boxers on the football side of it, they made it to the top in spite of everything that's going on in Dublin, not because of everything that goes on in Dublin. And that should never be the case. And the fact that I can list off, 10, 15 people that have gone to that 1% of the 1% at the top of the sporting ladder, they haven't really had any help. No real help whatsoever. And when I joined the campaign to save the pitch, some of the stats that you uncover, that there's not an 11-a-side pitch in Dublin One that you can just go and play football. There is ones that you can rent and so on and so forth. But a lad sitting at home that decides, I want to go out and kick a ball off a wall, there's nowhere to go. There wasn't as many cars. When I was younger, you could go and play in cul-de-sacs and stuff like that. But when's the last time you were walking to work or driving to work and you seen 5 or 6 kids having a game of football on the street? It doesn't happen anymore, and people are at the misunderstanding that academies make footballers. Academies polish footballers. Street is where the footballers are made, and if we don't have kids playing on the street, we're at a big disadvantage going into academy sport, and we're already tracing the rest of Europe anyway. So we're at a disadvantage already, going into a disadvantage, and it really is indefensible.
What's the story with the Strand at the moment? Is there any update on that?
I'm not the right man to talk for it, to be fair. I get text messages saying we're having a five-a-side, we're doing the X, Y, or Z, will you turn up and do this? I don't really get bogged down in the politics side of it, but I know Daniel Ennis is giving it a really good push, as is Kelly Harrington. There's a lot of other people in the background doing a lot of work, but I believe it's gone. I don't know the political term, but it's on hold at the minute, and it's going to be a meeting or whatever, and we'll get final say on it.
But it is kind of mad, because I used to think, and this was a complete inaccuracy, that Troy Parrott, for example, played with Belvedere because he was talented, and he got kind of like scouted by Belvedere and he went out there to play. The truth is that Troy Parrott had to leave his postcode because there was nothing in his postcode to actually play 11-a-side football on grass.
Yeah, crazy, isn't it?
It's
absolutely crazy.
Yeah.
And you would think, given that Dublin is going to be hosting Euro games, and to think that, you know, a very large prominent area in the north inner city of the city that's going to be hosting games in Europe is without a pitch is mad as well, that they're not trying to propel this on and try and get this sorted before, you know, the eyes of Europe and even the world are on the city.
Yeah, yeah. Do you know, it's not until you move outside of Dublin. My little fella plays for Sherry Street under 8, and he had a game against St. Ictus out towards Skerry's Way. It took us about half an hour to get out there, but my God, the facilities out there were unbelievable. A full-size Gaelic Astro pitch, a full-size football pitch, a little coffee dock at the back, open, like you could look up and see the sky. It's just unbelievable, but when you look at what the kids are dealing with in Dublin 1 and what, you know, when you go out rural, it really, really is chalk and cheese. And a lot of people say to me, well, that's the price of living in the city. It wasn't when I was a kid. There were still spaces to be able to play football and, you know, integrate street football and everything. But it just seems like it can't be done these days.
Ben, yourself and Torna were doing a lot of good work on this today in terms of ringing around, talking to sports organisations around the country as well. It does feel a lot of the themes that Keith is talking about there and that we're going to talk to the minister about later is kind of no different to the Irish football conversation in terms of availability of facilities, access to facilities and year-round facilities at that.
Yeah, it definitely, look, when we were researching this today and yesterday, it definitely felt like, you know, there's obviously a case where people are applying for funding and not getting it. There's cases where people don't even know the funding is going to be available to them. It did feel like when you look through the lists of the last 20 years of funding being given to clubs and given to facilities, that those who tend to be from a higher socioeconomic background are either the funds are more available to them or they've a higher way to get them. Obviously then the way that you acquire funds is not as simple as people I think will understand. You kind of have to put up some of the money yourself and show that you can pay it, and then they give you the increments. A lot of the research that we did around North Inner City Dublin found like really just absolutely pitiful amounts of money being given to areas that they need it most. You know, boxing clubs in particular all around Dublin who are just getting quite literally no money. And they're begging for money. They're having to turn away people at the doors. And, you know, this is what all that they can do really is campaign to the media to try and say, can you try to get a word in for us on this? It's stark viewing when you look at the country and you see how many people in this country are involved in sport. And I think with that game in Prague, there was so much hype around for so many months, and you kind of think, why was there so much hype? And it's because sport does this thing where it grabs Ireland as a nation like no other thing can. And if you don't have access for kids in pathways, then you said the likes of Troy Parrott, the likes of Wes Hoolan, these footballers who've given, you know, I remember growing up watching Wes Hoolan, like Hoolan was your idol playing for Ireland. And when he's playing the championship in Norwich, if we don't have pathways for kids to develop and become the next Troy Parrott, become the next Wes Hoolan, when sport is the heartbeat of a country, like, you've got your priorities just completely wrong.
Yeah. Our number is 0879 180 180. If you've got any opinions on this subject, as I say, we'll be running this from around 7:30 across the 8 o'clock news into the 8 hour as well with Minister Charlie McConnell. So let's get stuck into the newsroom because there is plenty else to discuss. We're going to start with the Premier League tonight, Dan.
Yeah, indeed. And Manchester City know that there's no margin for error as they welcome Crystal Palace to the Etihad. In the Premier League title race, Pep Guardiola's side have been dominant at home, unbeaten in their last 16 league games. Crystal Palace arrive with confidence, though, having scored at least twice in each of their last four visits to the Etihad. City have, as we've seen, rotated their squad, or could rotate, have rotated rather, ahead of the FA Cup final as well to come. Palace continue preparations for their Conference League showpiece. Pep says that there's nothing more on his mind, though, than tonight's game.
Important is tomorrow.
Yeah,
we'll see what happens to the next one. So always I learned when you lose the focus, you are in dangerous situations. So, and always I think that only we can do when we can to do it better. That is only in control. So, and that is Crystal Palace and focus. Of course, it's not in our hands in that particular Premier League from the other one. And always I said the place when I arrived here was in Barcelona by many guys. So do it better.
Do it better. Focus. Yeah, that's the message. Meanwhile, the Crystal Palace manager, Oliver Glasner, is not being drawn on his approach to the game and how it may potentially affect the destination of the Premier League trophy. He insists that his mind is only on attempting to beat last season's finish of 53 points in the table. They're currently on 50.
I don't think about it. I think if we make a point, we can't equalize our points record. So that's what we are looking at. Yeah, but this point can help us getting the five in front. So this is our approach. And also, I'm always very honest also with the players. I said we have now 2.5 weeks to go for our big game. Yes, it is. The biggest game we have to play right now, it will be the final. And what are we doing with these three Premier League games in between? Yeah, and I just told them my experiences that it's not possible to switch off now for 2 weeks and then switch on 2 days before the final. It's just not possible.
Well, Pep Guardiola, as you mentioned there, has made a heap of changes. Mm-hmm. He started Gianluigi Donnarumma in goal. It's Kushanov, Guehi, Kvaratskhelia, Ait Nouri, Mateus Nunes. So I don't know, one of those five is going to be in midfield alongside Bernardo Silva. Then it's Semenyo, Foden starts, Savinho starts, and Omar Marmoush starts. So you've got Haaland, Cherki, Doku all on the bench. Nico O'Reilly not in the squad tonight for Manchester City. For Crystal Palace, meanwhile, it's Dean Henderson in goal. It's Canvo, Lacroix, Chris Richards. It's Tariq Mitchell, Daniel Munoz on the wings. Will Hughes and Jefferson Lerma in midfield. Brennan Johnson and Jeremy Pino behind Jean-Philippe Mateta. Is there a bit of this, Keith, that's more than just looking ahead to the FA Cup final? Is there a little bit of this where if Arsenal drew with West Ham, that's a little bit of a stronger lineup he would have started tonight?
I don't think it's the worst Crystal Palace team in the world. When I heard the snippets from Oliver Glasner this morning saying, I checked my payslip and Arsenal and Manchester City didn't pay me anything, saying he's not going to do anybody any favours here, then why would he? He's got to look after his own players and his own team. But Mateta and Johnson, Brennan Johnson, are very, very dangerous players. Mitchell, the left-back, can get forward as well. So there is a little bit of hope there. Erling Haaland not playing for Manchester City, they don't do that too often. But
that's what I mean. Like, would Pep actually have played a much stronger team tonight if Arsenal had dropped points on Sunday?
I possibly, but I still think he's looking at Savinho, Foden, Semenyo, and Marmoush, thinking there's enough there for us. This is a weakened Crystal Palace team. It's not like a Palace team firing on all cylinders. And they've got their big hitters on the bench as well. So on paper, City obviously an awful lot stronger, but thankfully the game is not played on paper and there's always the chance of a banana skin.
There certainly is. So that's part 1A of the live football we'll be watching. Part 1B is up in Scotland. This is going to be pretty good. Daniel, fill us in.
Yeah, and history is coming back around for Celtic again tonight as Motherwell threatened to play title records for a second time. The Fair Park side famously, of course, denied Martin O'Neill's team the championship on Helicopter Sunday back in 2005. Now with the Premiership race once again on the knife edge, Martin O'Neill's men can't afford another slip up. It'll feel tense for Celtic, needing a result as leaders Hearts also take on Falkirk tonight. The difference in the table, just a single point. And Martin O'Neill was asked about his memories of losing that title against Motherwell before and also joked that he'd never return to Fair Park again if the worst were to happen tonight.
Us losing the title on the last day of the season, obviously very, very difficult to take. But no, that's, I think, the players that are playing now will have no memory of that whatsoever, so that doesn't make any difference.
You've been over the course and distance, you've won titles before. Other than the obvious 6 points needed in these last two games, what are you going to need from all of the players, staff, fans, everyone at the club to really push that team over the line?
I think you've summed it. You have to win the football matches, really. And that is up to the players, obviously up to the coaching staff, and naturally the supporters. We will have a really great support there tomorrow evening. Looking forward to the game. Actually, I'm looking forward to the match. The players are in good form. They're looking forward to it themselves, and they know what's ahead of them.
This is going to be box office stuff tonight and on Saturday, Keith.
Yeah, I can't wait. It's brilliant, isn't it? Obviously, I'd be a casual Celtic fan. I think like most of Ireland, other than the complete diehards. But look, having Hearts in the mixer, I think, is brilliant for so long. It was Celtic or Celtic Rangers, and we've a three-horse race now. I know Rangers have died off, but they were right at the party until the end. So I think it's absolutely excellent. There's another debate of whether Martin O'Neill should get the job full-time if he does end up winning the league with Celtic. It would be brilliant, but like, if you're a Hearts fan, you've got to be thinking it's got to be this year, because I don't think the Old Firm will ever be this poor again. Rangers, obviously, with Russell Martin not being too good and Danny Rawl coming in and doing a little bit better. Wilfred Nancy coming into Celtic and it being a little bit all over the place, and Martin O'Neill having to come in and sort stuff out and starting to get a bit of traction again. But for me, when I looked at Arsenal and West Ham on the weekend and the West Ham goal wasn't given towards the end, it just felt like things were starting to click for Arsenal to win the league. When Mejeda scores that overhead kick against Rangers, it just feels to me like it's starting to click for Celtic. And I know they have work to do. I know they've got to beat a decent Motherwell team tonight and they've got to beat Hearts at home on the final day. But I just feel it's clicking for Celtic. And what a wonderful job for Martin O'Neill. And I think it's great because modern managers, modern coaches, it's all about tactics, reinvent the wheel. Let's do something that nobody else can do. Martin O'Neill's not doing that. It's just about motivating players. Fairly similar to what Carrick is doing at Manchester United. I think it's brilliant knowledge of football and great to watch. So hopefully Celtic can get it done.
I think it's got to be tonight if Hearts are going to do it.
Yeah, I think, to be honest, I think Hearts probably beat Falkirk. Like, I think that's fairly set in stone. Falkirk bottom of the top half of the table after the split. This was always, for me, I always thought this was the game. Like, if Celtic were still going to be in it, the Motherwell game is like a potential banana skin, because you're always going to be geared up for the final game at home to Hearts. You're always going to be geared up for the Glasgow derby. But it's this one, and obviously with Jens Bertelascu at the helm of Motherwell, who's the favourite to go to Celtic next season as well, he has the chance to put down a real marker, you know what I mean, and put his name in lights. I just feel like if Celtic do get over the line tonight, like what Keith said, you feel like so much is clicking in their favour. You'd feel if they get the job done tonight, you would fancy them at Celtic Park on Sunday against Hearts.
Sense as well that maybe Scottish football needs Hearts to win this title, just to take it away from the Old Firm, that, you know, other teams outside of it can win it.
It'd be amazing. Yeah, I think this is as good a chance as I've ever seen for it to happen. It's been 40 years of a wait for a team outside the Old Firm to actually win the title, and I'm not sure if there's going to be a great opportunity anytime soon. Now, people will counter that by saying that Hearts have built this on Tony Bloom's money and their Jamestown Analytics recruitment, and that's going to lead to a future where Hearts are going to be able to make this a three-horse race in the Scottish Premiership next season and beyond. But I'll believe that when I see it. Give us one more soccer story before the ads, Dan.
Yeah, so Manchester United are ready to open talks about appointing Michael Carrick as their permanent head coach. It's been reported that the chief executive will recommend Carrick as Ruben Amorim's permanent successor to owner Jim Ratcliffe. Formal discussions are expected to start before their final Premier League game of the campaign against Brighton. The former United midfielder has won 10 of his 15 matches in charge on the way to also qualifying for the Champions League.
Okay, more from Dan Pitcher coming in just a moment. You're welcome back. Patrick has been in touch to say we spend millions on stupid infrastructure projects that are not needed, but anything that is spent on sports in this country seems to be community funded. Investment in sports has massive benefits for both social integration and health, not to mention the lift it gives the country when our sports people do well. So we'll be talking about that plenty with Charlie McConnell, who's due with us in about 10 minutes time. Also part of the Sport Monitor piece, it's Charlie McConnell's opinion, because he was writing an op-ed in the Examiner today that he wants Ireland to be the fittest nation in Europe by the year 2040. So when you talk about the investment in sports having massive benefits for social integration and health, it does seem that there's an awareness of that from the Department of Sport at the moment. But what they actually do in terms of making it more equitable in terms of applications and clubs getting their hands on sports investment, that for me is one of the big questions that we'll try and answer this evening. Dan Pitcher, where are we going next in tonight's news round?
Yeah, we're going to rugby, and Ulster have been dealt a major injury blow ahead of Friday's URC clash with Glasgow Warriors. Irish international Stuart McCluskey and Jacob Stockdale have both been ruled out through injury. Stockdale has undergone surgery on a facial fracture, while McCluskey faces several weeks out with a hamstring problem. Now, both players also, of course, then major doubts for Ulster's Challenge Cup final against Montpellier later this month in Bilbao. There was some positive news, however, with James Hume and Rob Herring both returning to training this week. There is also news that could potentially affect the Challenge Cup final as well. Ian Henderson is awaiting to hear whether his red card that he picked up last week will be overturned or not as well.
Now then, some news from Munster.
Yeah, they've confirmed the signing of the Irish international Jack Ainger on a 2-year contract. The 27-year-old tight head prop joins from Connacht, where he's made 100 appearances since 2020. Ainger made his Ireland debut against Georgia last summer after being called into a Six Nations squad. Munster say that the former Leinster Academy player will add power, experience and depth to their front row options.
Now then, it's been a busy day in terms of Gaelic Games news. Let's start with the GPA revenue story.
Yeah, the Gaelic Players Association saying 97% of its revenue is now being spent directly on player welfare and development programmes. As the GPA AGM, members also voted in favour of greater player representation across future integrated GAA structures. Chief Executive Tom Parsons says that athletes must have a stronger voice in decisions around governance, policy and competition structures. The GPA reported revenues of 7.6 million euro last year, with government funding continuing to rise. The association also confirmed that more than 500 inter-county players underwent cardiac screening during 2025.
There was a red card dismissed meanwhile.
Yes, the Mayo midfielder Hannah Reap looks set to be free to play in the upcoming rounds of the All-Ireland Ladies Football Championship after her red card from the Connacht final was overturned. She had been sent off after Mayo's defeat to Galway earlier this month following an incident involving Galway forward Eva Noon. As reported in the Irish Independent this evening, Connacht's LGFA hearings committee ruled that the allegation of striking had not been proven. The decision means that Reap avoids all suspension and will be available for Mayo's upcoming championship campaign.
Your next story is a huge story, potentially. Talk to us about the AFLW and what's going on there.
Yeah, so plans are being discussed at the moment for a new AFL women's team made up entirely of Irish players. Former Collingwood president Eddie McGuire says the talks have already taken place with an Irish diplomatic official and the AFL. The proposed side would likely be based out of Melbourne or Sydney and could enter the competition as a 20th franchise. 29 Irish players featured in the AFLW last season, underlining a growing influence of Gaelic footballers there.
39 Irish players.
Like, oh, 39, sorry, I beg your pardon.
But just to underline how vast the Irish stamp is on the AFLW, which in itself is a fairly new league and a fairly new sport for pretty much everybody who's playing the game down there. This is fascinating because you would assume that with some sort of official link between the AFLW and Gaelic Games, there's going to be some sort of money involved. And like, all these players are coming from the LGFA. And I heard, I think it was probably Eddie McGuire, I heard the audio this morning anyway, that they played an off-the-ball breakfast and they were talking about compensation to the GAA. Clearly not realising that the GAA has nothing to do with these women. It's the LGFA who they play for. So, I mean, could the LGFA out of the blue become the most lucrative body in Irish sports? It'd be interesting to see how this one plays out. I don't know. It's obviously fantastic for all these individual players, but I often think when it comes to this story that's been brewing along for the last couple of years about the exodus of players of the AFLW, it's just a bit of an indictment in terms of what's actually available to them here. That there's a reason why there's more of an exodus of women to Australia for Aussie rules than there is of men. It's that the men probably feel like they have a better life here in terms of their own sport, better promotion, better competition structures, a greater spotlight on them. It just kind of feels that if you're flying along in the LGFA here compared to in the GAA, there is more of an incentive for you to actually pack up your bags and leave. Yeah,
absolutely. Can you imagine being given maybe the opportunity of, you know, you if you're playing in the LGFA and you're playing at inter-county level, you might get your, you know, you'll get your obviously games are shown on TG Cahir and you'll get a big day out at the end of the year in Croke Park versus you're playing in Melbourne or Sydney in one of these huge super hubs in the world. You're being paid, you're being put every week on the national broadcast, or you're being highlighted on social media and in just regular national media in print and on TV. You all of a sudden become this superstar level kind of player in Australia and you're platformed in a way that you're just not here. And it's a sad indictment of maybe what we have here and what we offer players in the LGFA here. More power to them, like Dublin Dons times 10 with this. Like I'm all on board for this.
We have one last story then. The USPGA is getting up and running tomorrow, Dan.
Yeah, so Patrick Harrington has given himself a reduced workload this week. I'm not sure if you've seen the quotes, like he's sort of weighed in quite an awful lot on the Rory McIlroy situation as well. We brought you news last night that the former or that McIlroy rather has had an issue with his foot this week. He pulled out of a practice round suffering with a blister. He also found out that he had to cut off part of his toenail in order to sort that out, which I find absolutely rank.
I personally am not a fan of that sort of thing.
The issue though not expected to prevent the world number two from teeing off tomorrow. Harrington said the golfers battled through issues all the time and that Rory will need to play through the pain. He added as well that for a third of my tournaments I wasn't even close to fit to being playing from 2000 to 2016. He said he had his neck operation. He said I'd say for two thirds of the tournaments I wasn't fit, and for one third I was completely unfit. It's the nature of the game, everybody's playing through something. So quite interesting comments from him.
Yeah for sure. Man up, Rory, says
yeah, basically.
Patrick Harrington. If you're a golf nerd and you want to see how Patrick Harrington was getting ready for the USPGA Championship, just Google his name or put his name into social media and up will pop a video on X of him with a posture corrector on the range. He's teeing up beside Cameron Young and Rory McIlroy, and one of them is using a posture corrector. He is a swing nerd, and if you're into that sort of thing, then check that out.
The News Round is brought to you by Viagra Connect 50 milligram film coated tablets.
Contains sildenafil for adult men with erectile dysfunction. Maximum dosage 150 milligram tablet per day. Always read the label. Buy online at viagraconnect.ie. Subject to suitability following pharmacist consultation.